From the KTOO Newsroom in Juneau, I'm Madeline Baxter with this news. The Alaska Marine Highway System has stopped selling tickets past September. As Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, that's in response to the governor's proposed budget that would effectively shut down service later this year.
Governor Mike Dunleavy's official biography describes him as arriving in Alaska in 1983, looking for opportunity. His first stop was Ketchikan, the center of Southeast Alaska's logging industry. Flash forward 35 years later, he's back in town as a candidate for governor and asked about his views on the state's ferry system.
I mean, it's obvious, right? I came up on a ferry from Seattle. Yeah, I didn't drive here. You can't drive here.
That's from an interview with KRBD's Layla Carey last April. He told Ketchikan's public radio station he was exploring how the ferry system could be run more efficiently without cutting services.
I don't envision at any time that there would not be a functional, robust ferry service in the southeast, the panhandle of Alaska.
But his administration is proposing a $96 million cut that would effectively shut down the system. Go online and try to book a ticket after September. It's not happening. Ferries spokeswoman Orlando said the booking system reflects the administration's proposal.
Right now, the Marine Highway System is not accepting reservations past September and does not have any vessels scheduled for October onwards.
That has some people scrambling. The southeast community of Angoon has no airport or barge service. Mayor Joshua Bowen said Angoon's passengers and goods come in either by a twice-weekly ferry or by float plane.
If the ferry gets cut on October 1st and we have to go through the winter without any ferry, it's gonna be major. You know, everyone in Angoon relies on that ferry.
The Dunleavy administration is trying to close a $1.6 billion budget gap without raising taxes on people or industry or reducing Alaskans' annual permanent dividend checks. That's meant deep cuts now before lawmakers. The administration proposes bringing in a consultant to look at privatization 2 months before the service shuts down. That's been met with some skepticism. Here's Anchorage Republican Senator Natasha Von Imhoff.
Why the rush? Why are we just cutting several tens of millions of dollars in 1 year, a short period of time, versus over a course of a couple years, particularly to allow this consultant to finish his or her work? Why are we just game over as of the end of October?
The state's Office of Management and Budget points to declining revenue from passengers. Fewer people ride the ferry, and that means less income. The state wants to spend $96 million earmarked for the ferry elsewhere. But other Republican lawmakers express concern about humanitarian effects of ceasing service so abruptly. Here's Wasilla Republican Mike Schauer, a former Air Force pilot, quizzing budget officials.
If you shut down the ferry operations, you are potentially, I hate to say it, but you're potentially strangling those communities because they may not make it through the winter without that if the airports can't support them, and my guess is they can't.
Separately, there's been an ongoing effort to reform the state marine highway system as a public corporation. But even that alternative would still require sustained support from the legislature to operate the fleet. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
At the same time the Dunleavy administration is proposing to end ferry service, it's also going to be looking into selling or closing state-owned airports. A February 12th memo from the governor directs the Department of Transportation to investigate options for reducing the number of public airports owned by the state. Dunleavy is asking for a report by June 1st with options for selling, transferring, closing, or leasing airports, along with the cost savings these changes could mean. There are over 700 airports in Alaska, and 239 are owned and operated by the state, including many in Southeast. Probably legal. That's U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan's opinion on the emergency President Trump declared to direct money to the southern border. But Sullivan says he's worried about the projects the money will be diverted from.
I would have concerns, particularly if it's coming out of Alaska military construction, which is not only important for our state, it's really important for the national security of the country.
In his annual address to the state legislature today, Sullivan highlighted military spending in Alaska as a reason to hope the state's economy is finally on the rise.
In just the past 3.5 years, Senator Murkowski, Congressman Young, and I have been able to secure over $1.3 billion in military construction for our state, including the F-35s to Eielson and a new missile field at Fort Greely.
In his speech, Sullivan did not mention that some of the money could be sent to the southern border, because when Trump declared the emergency, the White House announced his intention to take $3.6 billion from military construction accounts. And the Alaska State Department of Education is in the process of revamping its science standards. It hopes to have a draft released by March. This week, we're going into two Alaska classrooms to learn how teachers and students are navigating the difficult topic of climate change. Elizabeth Jenkins from Alaska's Energy Desk visited Polaris K-12 in Anchorage, where a classroom is faced with a big decision.
Brian Smith is the kind of teacher who goes by his first name in the classroom. You could call his teaching style eclectic.
Okay, I'll take two on the left.
Today, his class of high school students are learning about resource extraction by competing to grab goldfish crackers off a row of tables. Snatch too many goldfish and you deplete the fishery.
As soon as I saw people take more than three fish, I knew it was over for me.
Katie LeBlanc, a ninth grader, says not everyone is playing fair. But she understands the point.
If people are greedy and take more than an ecosystem can handle, then by the end, nobody will be able to use that resource. It'll be gone.
Later, the class brainstorms helpful values for solving the problem. Things like communication, planning, and following regulations. It sounds like the students are having a good time. But Brian acknowledges these are tough things to talk about, especially in a resource-dependent state.
I've got this Upton Sinclair quote above my door. It's difficult to get a man to understand something when his salary depends on his not understanding it.
Alluding to the tightrope discussions Brian has to have with his students. Some of their parents are employed by the oil and gas industry. Brian says it can be a sensitive topic. The business that's feeding some families is also contributing to an increase in carbon emissions. So there are the social complexities of teaching about climate change in an oil state. And then there are the emotional ones.
One of the reasons why I suspect other teachers might not want to jump into this, besides it being a political hot topic, it's heavy. And it's a real downer.
Brian says the future can appear increasingly uncertain, dangerous, and even scary for kids. He describes it as taking an unblinking look into the void. Alaska is warming twice as fast as the global average temperature. So the students in his classroom are given a choice. And this is where Brian takes another page from the great contemporary works.
This is your last chance.
The Matrix.
After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill, the story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill, you stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
And do most of the students want to take the blue pill, or do they want to take the red pill when you ask them that question?
I have had one student who went to the counselor and said, I don't think I want to take this class.
Of course, Brian's not presenting his class of middle and high school students with real pharmaceuticals. It's a metaphor. Take the blue pill and drop the elective science class. Or take the red pill and learn more about the leading causes of climate change and its effects. Brian believes the student who opted out felt like the subject was just too much to handle. And he says that's okay. He wants his classroom to be intellectually and emotionally prepared for the things they're about to hear.
The projections are grim. That's why scientists over the past couple of decades have started speaking out publicly.
Brian admits he's struggled to explain this to his own kids, who are 11 and 14. He feels conflicted, like he's stealing away a piece of their childhood by telling them the truth. And the concern is somewhat valid. The state's former health commissioner even put out a report warning about increased anxiety and depression as Alaskans grapple with the changing environment. Some of his younger students have asked him to dial it back.
They were kids and they wanted to just go play on the swings, and that's fine.
But like Morpheus and Neo in The Matrix, if a student is ready, Brian wants him to have all the information. Climate change is happening. The future, as projected, looks pretty bleak. Our carbon emissions are a major contributing factor. But he assures them there are things they can do. The antidote to despair is action, he says. Still, Brian has received some pushback from at least one of the teens in his class. It was for an assignment where he asked students to engage in some kind of activity, applying their values to what they learned. So a student made a flyer for an Anchorage neighborhood.
The gist of it was that climate change wasn't happening.
But Brian didn't fail that student, because he completed the assignment and applied his values to the task. Unlike carbon emissions, beliefs can be harder to measure.
Some people you won't be able to reach.
But that was one isolated event over the course of 7 years of teaching about climate change. Brian says most of his students know it's occurring, and they genuinely want to do something about it. I ask, what's the biggest takeaway he wants his classroom to leave with? After a pause, he says he wants them to feel empowered, to take some action, whatever that means to them, and then stop thinking about the rabbit hole. Go out and enjoy the sunshine. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Anchorage.
That's the latest from the KTOO Newsroom. I'm Adeline Baxter.